Chapsticks for different places.
Oh, yeah.
One for the office.
I took those away everywhere.
Oh, I thought you meant like different places on your body.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 194 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the gains programmer.
Ooh, I'm Adam, and I'm a decrepit old man.
I'm Sam, and my back hurts.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is March 11th, 2019.
Shockingly correct sounding.
It's just a regular day.
Yeah.
Just
it's a day after Mario Day.
It's just a regular Monday. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity, maybe curses flipping around. Mm-hmm. Like
flipping wombats. Curses.
So don't, you're going to need to step aside, you know, watch
Practice
out.
Your defense against the dark arts.
They're coming.
They're coming.
Uh-huh. They're coming for you. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. If you'd like to help support the podcast and keep our mic juice flowing, you can head on over there and then we'll grab your money. Moneygrab.bscotch.net. Mm-hmm. Let's get on to the news. It's Daylight Savings.
Oh, God. The worst
day. Have we figured this out yet?
Nope.
No. None of us know why this happens. Mm-mm. My wife was explaining to our niece over the weekend what Daylight Savings is. Our niece is in India. Mm-hmm. And this 8-year-old the whole time was like, I don't understand. What do you mean you changed the clocks?
Why would you all agree to have less sleep?
Why would you do this? Mm-hmm. So, and of course, we're like, I don't know. Nobody knows.
Literally, I mean, nobody wants this.
We know
nobody
why it was.
No, we don't.
Don't we? It was a farm-related thing, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. That's Wait, the myth. What? It was actually a golf-related thing.
A golf?
Yeah, I'm not even kidding. I,
is that right?
It is.
It's trying to read your face.
Spin us a yarn out.
I can't remember the details, unfortunately, but I have to go look this up.
You mean two people were golfing, and they were like, you know what would really fuck people up?
We need to win this tournament. What if we change the clock?
Yes. No, I swear it was some weird sports related thing.
Yeah, because I remember, of you know, if you think about farmers, like they're oftentimes tending to animals who don't fucking use clocks.
Farmers don't give a fuck about it.
They don't care what time it is.
They use the sun.
The sun comes up and they're like, I have to work now.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's time. Right. It's time to get my stuff done. And it doesn't matter if you're moving it ahead or backwards because they're just working the whole day, you know. So people die though. I mean, daylight savings time.
It literally kills people.
It kills people.
This one that just happened, which is the one where you lose an hour.
You lose an hour. People wake up and they're like, oh crap, I'm late. They're also tired. Mm-hmm. Then they rush out the door, drive
car
like crazy.
Rates go up.
Car accident rates go up. Mm-hmm. Heart attacks go up because of people panicking.
That's also just on Mondays things. Though. Is actually the most common day for people.
Yeah, is it relative to a normal Monday that this is true?
That's all Mondays. All Mondays have a higher rate.
Yeah,
no,
that's true. But then is the daylight savings Monday even worse than
yes,
that?
Yes, I believe okay. So. We'll find the horrible statistics.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is murder.
And yet every year we're like, okay, let's just
– We all have to do this. We've all agreed that this is one of those, you know, this is just the way we do things.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we do it. And people will die. But we must maintain the tradition.
It is true that nobody wants it, though.
Nobody.
I haven't heard anybody advocate for daylight savings time ever.
Not this one. Everyone advocates for the other one.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of those bugs in the game where they always kind of like – they're just minor enough and they happen infrequently enough that they always kind of fall down the Trello board.
Oh, well, yeah. It only happens once in a bad way every year.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know? So it only happens once. So everybody gets pissed off and outraged by it, you know, a few days ahead of time and then the week after.
But then the next time you get an extra hour and now the sun's coming
like
up earlier.
It feels balance.
Like, yeah. And you're like, this is great. And then all of a sudden you just – it's all is forgiven.
I guess on the other hand, you know, we're talking about, you know, balance in video games, how you need the shitty stuff to make the good stuff feel better. Mm. And so this might actually just be sort of a video game balance problem. Where
maybe it's one of
the
those...
only reason to have daylight savings time is because the horribleness of the one direction makes the other side feel really good, but also the other side feels good anyway. But the only way we can have it is by having the horribleness.
Maybe it's a shared experience thing too, you know? Yep. Like when you have people who go through a terrible experience together, it bonds them, you know? So like all of us react, maybe this is just a giant ploy.
Yeah. This is a conspiracy by the lizard people.
By lizard people to make us all more bonded together.
Yeah.
Wait,
why would they want us to be more?
You don't know what the lizard people want.
That's a good point.
They're lizards.
That's true.
We can't cast our own feelings on them.
Yeah, cut that out.
They got cold blood. We don't know. We don't know what's going on in there.
What's going on in the creepy brain?
This past weekend, We announced, well, on Thursday, we announced Level Head is going into early access in April
on Steam.
When in April? Just April.
We do have a specific day that we're intending to do it on, but
it's best to keep those
things. It's best to wait until, you know.
Notably, well, two things. One is it is happening in April.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's
unlike back in November when we said it was happening in November, but we kind of just had to at that time for sort of political reasons, right. I guess.
That wasn't completely our idea necessarily.
No.
So this time, this is us legit announcing, yes, this is happening. It's coming to Level. It's coming to Steam, early access in April. We released a trailer. If you haven't seen it yet, go check that out. It's pretty great. It's
got a lot of moths.
Sam and Fat Bard really went hard on that trailer.
It's fun.
So let's talk about early access.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
why.
Why?
We should first say that we've known we were going to do early access since November.
Yeah. So Adam apparently has been listening to the podcast from like months ago.
Yeah. I like to – because I like to kind of just see what we've – like our thoughts on stuff kind of, and see how just even 3 months later –
because we can't remember anything.
Yeah. And so it's fun. It's fun to go back and listen to those. And I also don't want to listen to it right after we record it because I was just there.
Yeah.
You know, that's really boring. So I want to have forgotten enough that I could be like, oh, yeah, that's why we're doing this now and that kind of thing. So I just hit in the November episode where we came back and we told everybody that was listening to the podcast about this big news item that we had that we couldn't share with anybody. Mm-hmm. And that was –
that was it.
That was it.
That was it.
It was
and
a
then
fact.
We didn't. And we, then we didn't. Owned up. We mm-hmm. owned that one.
Yeah, we did.
The reason we decided to go to early access was we had had a pretty lengthy internal discussion about the type of game Level Head is and really the sort of power that comes from the game like this, which is all about the community.
Well, I want to give a shout out to Hopfrog.
Yep.
Who is a developer who we met in Uruguay. And we had been kind of just keeping an eye on what this guy was doing.
Is that a company name or a handle?
As his company name. Okay. It's just him. And then he's
what's
got
the
game
game
called Forager,
yeah.
Which we met with him and he was so pumped and he was like, I stole so many things from Crashlands. We were like, great.
Yeah. We stole tons of things from other people too.
Yeah, so it's just how it works. And we went – so I was on the Game Maker podcast called Obj Podcast, mm-hmm. which is – it's hard to say and spell, but mm-hmm. – And to catch up, I started listening to that podcast and he was on the episode before me and he started talking about what he was doing with his game, which was he was going into early access and he had it up on itch and he was like, yeah, you know, the game's not even close to done and it's broken in all kinds of ways, but there's still enough stuff in there that I've been able to, you know, grow this community. And he ended up with like 80,000 Steam wish lists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just from having his game up on itch, like a small
at that time
demo.
We had I think 300
yeah.
maybe
yeah. So we looked at that and we were like, wait a minute, you can do that.
Yeah, it goes to the whole thing we've talked about, which is people cannot care until they can play it, essentially in a
yeah.
lot of ways. And so the question that immediately came out of Seth wrapping up his podcast episode with the Object Podcast was can
we do that?
Can we because
do
this that? Game seems perfectly fit for it. It's not like Crashlands where we had this long narrative to spool out.
Yeah.
It was this game is all about playing content and also this churn of just infinite variation of content created by this user base. So can we get to that part sooner rather than trying to do it all at launch and have that whole
yeah.
weird thing
happen? So we started looking at all these different games that have been doing early access. Mm-hmm. So we looked at – and some of the games that we loved playing, so Kerbal Space Program or RimWorld and Slime Rancher or Slay the Spire. We're like, shit, these are all in early access. And they're all doing great. Mm-hmm. And these are the kinds of games that are
Subnautica.
Built – Subnautica. And these are the kinds of games that are largely built on interactions between modular components of the game.
Yeah, so crafting games or – I guess the card game in that one
yeah.
case.
Yeah, or building games. Yeah. You know? Because the idea here is if you have a game that has 100 components and each of those components can interact with like most of the others, then all of a sudden you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of different ways that you can combine all these different things.
Or if you have a roguelike where the experience can be different
every time.
So if you add new content, people are guaranteed to always get to experience it.
So, so there's this thing where, you know, if in a story-driven game, adding new content takes away from the early access experience because now it's spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you change the story, people don't want to have to go through the first 10 hours of the story to get to the new part that you changed, even though they may have gotten past it or whatever. So we're looking
there's
at Level
we had with Crashlands, right? Because every time we put out a content update, and then we add some new stuff. Like you basically, a player either has to go back to experience it or they don't get to yet. And so it doesn't even matter that we put it there because they didn't know what it was like to not have it.
Yep. Yeah. So the incentive on us as a developer for a story game is like, well, it's done now. That's it. Right. And so with Levelhead, we started looking into like, okay, what would this look like? And we just decided, yeah, I think this is the kind of game that it would work for. And the one kind of catch to all that was we were planning on doing our normal sort of simultaneous launch thing. It was going to be, you know, PC, Mac, iOS, Android, and Switch. But, then when we started learning about DevOps and about this continuous delivery, we thought, okay, if we do the early access stuff, then that means we can really rapidly develop the game and continuously deliver, you know, a smaller update and be really responsive without having to worry about compatibility issues across a large number of platforms, without having to worry about, you know, sort of making sure that we are constantly adhering to all the different terms of different platforms. And like, if we keep it in one place, then we can do really, really well in that one place, grow the community there. And then when we launch a full 1.0, then that's when we, you know, blast it out to all the other platforms. So it all seemed to make sense.
Yeah.
And then Mario Maker happened. Yeah. So I mean, we didn't actually have a timeline. We just thought
we were still going to do it until we thought it was basically like felt done. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think we always tend to overdo it, I think, in terms of what we believe to be the requirement of quality before it goes out.
Our good enough bar is
it's actually very high, a bit
higher than
yeah. And so we when the Mario Maker thing hit, we basically just had this this really long meeting where we looked through where the game was, all the priorities in the game, and then just sort of removed everything that wasn't absolutely required.
Well, because when that came out, we looked at when we would need to have the game out in early access to get ahead of the Mario Maker launch.
Yeah.
And it basically meant it had to be out in April. That's why we're going to do it. It's just what has to happen.
Yeah.
So we saw that, and then we had to walk that back and ask, okay, well, if this is to be out in April, but we need to get it into the public's hands for at least an alpha test at minimum, right? Then when does that have to happen? And so, you know, we were working this backwards.
But then there's GDC mixed in there.
GDC. Yep. So we worked this backwards, and basically that meant that the alpha had to be this last weekend.
Yeah.
It was the only option.
Keep in mind,
was like 3 weeks.
That was three weeks. Yeah. That was 3 weeks after the Mario Maker announcement.
The Mario Maker announcement, we're just like, oh no.
Yeah. So that meant we had, because we thought we had like, we were kind of thinking the middle of the summer was when we were going to do early access launch.
Well, we were actually aiming for around June.
Around June.
Yeah. The comical part. We saw that. We were like, shit.
And so now we suddenly had 3 weeks in which to decide, okay, what do we either scrap as just a thing we're not going to do now, or back burner, or just reprioritize, or convert into a new thing, or whatever, so that we can make – so that in 3 weeks, we'd actually have the game in nearly the state we wanted to be in for our early access launch.
Well, that's been one of the most interesting ones, because we've talked a lot about how it's the Leonard Bernstein quote that all you need for greatness is a plan and not enough time, sort of a thing.
Right.
So yeah. We suddenly had that happen. And essentially what happened was that it did convert actually a few of our plans into other things. So for example, when you boot up Levelhead for the first time, you are treated to this sort of employee corporate
presentation
about like your role in the company and what you're about to do. And that thing actually is sort of the boiled down essence of what was originally going to be this longer form dialogue based story, almost kind of similar to what we had in Crashlands, where a lot of characters talking and that sort of thing. And we actually had the art for the dialogue system was in, and actually the dialogue system is in, or was in, I guess. And then we had the characters done, that sort of thing, but we didn't have the story written, and nor did we have really a total understanding of what the story was going to be, and it was going to require quite a bit of, you know, verbose work to do to put together, because there's going to be every single level you played in the campaign, it was going to have a lot of people talking before it. It's here's this or whatever, and then you go in.
Which it might still eventually. We don't actually know.
It may still, yeah. We might still have pieces of that.
Not right now.
Yeah. It shifted the focus in this really big way, where it's like, okay, how can we deliver?
Because that was going to increase the difficulty of translation. It was going to increase the time of actually getting this thing out.
So then the question was, okay, how do we still really get people into the world that we're trying to build, really make them feel like they're in this place and they're partaking of this role, but without having to do that? Like, what's the sort of equivalent? And so we just storyboarded this presentation and then just built it, and yeah, people loved the hell out of the thing, which was so fun. And
like, I love that. Yeah, we had this was during one of our brainstorming sessions. We have a section, this is not a spoiler because it's literally the first thing that happens, but where you get to
absolutely not, do not spoil
too much of a spoiler.
Yeah. all right,
fine. It is the first thing that happens, but it doesn't mean it's not a great time that you don't want to spoil.
All right, I won't say
it's super good, but yeah, so we converted a few of these things that were going to be more monumental projects, I guess, into just sort of like what the bare essence of it was to deliver what mm-hmm. we needed to deliver. And that, I mean, you know, that's what you got to do sometimes yeah. when you're working on this creative stuff. And actually, it's good. Like, I'm totally happy with how it turned out. I'm not bummed at all that we scrapped the dialogue system. I'm like, this is good. And people really like it. It seems to fit with the tone of the game. And that was actually one of the major requests we got from the alpha, was people were like, I want more of those.
Yeah, do more of that.
Okay. So that's one of the nice things about doing the alpha too this weekend, is you get to see what people actually respond to.
Yeah, we learned about what made people the most excited, and also what we had the most fun seeing, right? Mm-hmm. And one of those things was just the weird, complicated shit that people came up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have this system in Levelhead that's all about switches. So some items in the game are receivers. So they listen to sort of signals. Mm-hmm. And then some items are switches, which send signals. And the signals, it's binary. It's either just on or off. So you may have a lever, and when you flip it, it's on. And when you flip it the other way, it's off. Or you may have a proximity sensor that, if a player comes near it, it turns on. If a player mm-hmm. leaves, it turns off. So you assign numbers to these things, and then the receivers who have the same number will now listen to whatever the signal is. So you may have like a big inflatable block that, when the player comes near, then it inflates, or when an enemy comes near, it inflates, or when they collect a number of coins, it inflates. You can do all right. these different things. And people started, especially this one guy whose handle was 9J0806, which is, I don't even know, I think he's a robot or something. He started making stuff.
Yeah.
He started making stuff that actually made us rethink our entire strategy on like what actually we need to be focusing on in the game.
We're going to deliver content early access.
Because we kept thinking like this is a platformer. And when this guy got his hands on the game, we're like, oh shit, this is like an Erector set. Like this is a toy that you can do all kinds of crazy stuff with. Yeah. So this guy made a calculator mm-hmm. where he figured out how to use inflatable balloons attached to different pressure plates to create a numerical display. So you could like step on different pressure plates, and then the same area would change what it's displaying to show the number.
Yep.
And so then you could do math, but you could say like 9 + 3 or something. And then once you flipped a switch after you put the numbers in, you'd go to the next room, and then it would give you that number of enemies to fight.
Yeah.
So you'd be like 9 + 3, and then you go to the next room and like 12 enemies fly in. And we're like, what? And this was the first thing that he did. Then he went on to make some kind of weird pseudo Tetris game where like randomly things inflate mm-hmm. inside, like while you're dodging bullets, and it like stacks up and then you escape. He made a 3-in-1 arcade game sort of style thing where he made a recreation of Space Invaders. He made a recreation of the original Donkey Kong mm-hmm. and one of the original Mario games, all in the same level. So you'd flip a switch to change.
You hop in a barrel to travel to that arcade game. Yeah.
And I mean, the stuff that was coming out here, we were just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Did not realize that we had something like this. So that started making us think like, what else can we do with this mm-hmm. system? So we have now, like today, we have to go and have a discussion of trying to figure out like how we can really blow the lid off of that whole thing.
And we should probably pause the podcast right now because it is currently a wind tunnel in here because our AC just kicked on.
Okay, we're back. We just had a weird moment.
The air conditioner
just turned on full blast. We had to stop. But we're back now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyways, what were we talking about? Switches.
Well, I think just the general outcome from the alpha.
Yeah, so we were thinking about the game as like, as a platformer, you make levels and people try to beat them. Mm-hmm. And you have
sort of a platformer first and then a level sharing editor thing second, but kind of equally.
And we're just thinking about these switches in the context of like, oh, people can use these to make interesting levels for the people to beat.
But what we saw is basically you can make contraptions, basically.
Yeah, you can make weird machines.
Toys. Yeah. And also those toys are also very shareable things, right? People like seeing, they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How did this happen? And so part of it is sort of exploring that angle of the game.
That was the case in things like Kerbal Space Program with the mod scene there that kind of introduces these kinds of components mm-hmm. as well. Because they have there's some big robotics mod, which is one that's so like complex and you do such crazy shit with it that I added it once and then tried to play with it and I was like, this is beyond my my skill.
Take it away.
Yeah. What you end up doing is you end up sort of like turning, you can hotkey different servos.
Yeah.
So you sort of like, you build your robot with little extenders and benders and things. Mm-hmm. And then you can, for example, like I hotkeyed my numpad and I made a rover that could like walk around and stuff. And you had to like control its legs with different keys, you know. All this stuff, which you would never – like the creators of Kerbal Space Program never intended for this because they didn't put it in the game. And then somebody did anyway.
Well, so the thing is the alpha was super interesting because it was essentially a crash course in early access, which is exactly what we were intending to also test our dev processes, to test how we
are able – feedback system.
Yeah, how we're able to continue getting work done in that environment.
Which was we weren't.
Yes.
At first.
Yeah.
We weren't at first and then – and then we got – I think it's also weird because it was a time-limited thing. It was just over a weekend. And so, of course, we're not normally working on Saturday, Sunday as like full work days. But it kind of – I had the feeling like it I kind of felt like I was supposed to because it was time-limited. And it was definitely
– it was a little much.
Yeah, but it was much. It was
we got to figure it out, figure that aspect out. But I think it was – to me, it was really good because we got to see – one, the game's got legs. It definitely has some legs to it. And then two, that the approach of early access will give us – it'll just give us a ton of design ideas. Like we had plenty of interesting feedback from people where it wasn't even necessarily that we would take the exact feedback that people gave us, but it sparks a discussion about a thing that then leads to, you know, design change, something like that. So it's been super interesting. I'm so excited to actually get the thing into early access for real so people can – like a wider audience can play it and see what happens there.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And it was also kind of cool seeing – like once we had enough people in the pool, then they were able to, you know, talk on the Discord and kind of compare notes. And you already started to see these kinds of like cultural ideas start to emerge. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things that I made when we started the pre-alpha was I made this – I had this dumb idea for a level that had
– Package Jump Panic.
Called Package Jump Panic, where we have – there's a move in Levelhead called a Package Jump where you throw a package onto some spikes – and then you jump off the package while grappling down and you pick the package. So you basically use the package as a platform.
You pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Right. Yeah. But then you shoot your grapple down and you bring the package with you. And then you have to throw it down again on the next set of spikes. Right. So you're kind of like carrying in this platform with you to keep yourself from dying. And if you mess up the throw or the landing or whatever, even once, then you're dead. Mm-hmm. And so throughout the campaign, we employ the package jump sparsely. You know, it kind of happens every few levels, maybe once.
It's a hard move, but it's also one of those core moves of the game. It's like a very interesting differentiator for the game. And so it's actually the hardest thing to teach because it's a very hard move. It requires pressing three buttons simultaneously, right? Yeah. So it's a weird move to teach. And so actually that was one of the biggest challenges with the campaign was that one of the levels called package jump test in the campaign – it happens pretty early on because, again, this is one of the core things you need to know how to do. And it was just this sort of ramp of difficulty of these package jumps and to the point where like people can't figure out how to do it just to start with. And so we had to trap them in a little hole in the ground, basically, where the only way you could get out of it was by successfully performing this jump, which is not a lot of fun. So we ended up having to like – we reworked actually.
That and rework it.
Yeah, we reworked the entry of the campaign and a bunch of stuff. But yeah, your package jump – panic level essentially becomes this meme, I guess.
Yeah, well, package jump panic was a level that was only made of spikes. Mm-hmm. Like there was nothing to stand on.
It was you, your package, and spikes.
And spikes. And so you actually start the level on spikes, but standing on your package on the spikes. And so then immediately you have to start like hoisting your package up and jump to the next thing and throw it down and land on the package. And that's how you navigate the entire level. And so several people in the alpha saw that and they were like, oh, that's kind of a goofy thing. Let me try my own spin on it. Mm-hmm. So then somebody else made their level called, you know, like Zesty Package Jump Panic or something. And then some people started like taking that Package Jump Panic as like a style of level and then attaching their own prefix or suffix to it.
Right.
And
they got abbreviated to PJP.
And it just became then it just became PJP levels, yep. You know. And so then they started talking about like, well, you know, it's a rite of passage. Like you gotta build and publish your own PJP level, and that's like that's what makes you a true.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. I just seeing like just over the course of the weekend how some of the like the language of the game started to grow and evolve, and people started like having these shared experiences that
see because that came out of they didn't come out of the campaign, right? They came out of a level that you shared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just like, hey guys, try this. And then that was
– Yeah, and so you can see how had you been some other rando community member instead, of one of the developers, right, the same outcome would have happened.
And I'd be like, damn, that's awesome.
Yeah, except now that would have been an origin completely outside of what we actually intended for the game.
Yeah,
which is really cool.
Yeah, and so it just kind of goes to show that with these games that are all about, you know, community and about creation and stuff, you know, they just kind of take on a life of their own in a way that is pretty remarkable, in a way that, you know, with something like Crashlands, everybody goes through it and has the same sort of handcrafted experience that we intended them to have. And with something like Levelhead, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yep,
really. So it's kind of awesome. So that all happened. And yeah, we have a lot of work to do now to kind of parse all the feedback and figure out what the next
– figure out our priorities for the next couple of weeks, basically, because that's all we got.
Because we have – what is – this is like March 11.
We got a week until GDC.
And then we have – and the GDCs were just toast. Yep.
And then after the next week, it's April.
Fuck.
And then now we got to figure out.
So we have something on the order of a few weeks.
Of
2 to 4 full work weeks, basically.
Yeah.
And that includes we have to make new trailers, have to build new levels, test everything.
I mean, we're still in it. Like, we're still right in the thick of it.
Well, and then once we're done, now we're just in early access, which is just more of the same.
Yeah. But early access, I feel like we're going to have a better sort of life balance.
Oh yeah. I think once it's out, because we'll still be pumping content into there, but it won't be the mad rush anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. We can do it Monday through Friday it'll be much more
on terms.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of making sure everybody's about to lose access to the game, so we got to make sure that we get this patch in now. Yeah. There'll be a little bit more time. So I'm excited about that. And then otherwise, in terms of other GDC stuff, we do have our GDC meetup on March 18th at 4:30 p.m. So if you are going to be in San Francisco on, I guess, next Monday.
Yeah, coming up.
Come on over. And where do we have information about that?
We'll just be meeting at the Yerba Buena Park.
The Yerba Buena
area.
Garden.
We'll probably meet in the little mall thing and just, I don't know, find a spot to hang out.
Hopefully it'll be nice outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I don't know, tweet at us or
something. Yeah, just keep an eye on our Twitter. We'll
use Twitter during GDC, so unfortunately. Yep. But
and we are at B-Scotch Shenanny, because that was as many characters
as we could. That was as far as we could go.
And also, we wanted to get at B-Scotch at some point, but somebody already has that. Mm-hmm. We can't.
Yeah, there was a band, I think, called Butterscotch.
Yeah. I think it's a solo artist, but
they also own bscotch.com.
So they own bscotch.com, and their logo is like a glass of scotch or something.
No,
like
that was a different one.
That was a different one?
There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of things like that.
Yeah. So we were late to the party on that.
The shenanigans is really what sets us apart.
Yeah. That's it. Everybody's got the butterscotch, but we have the shenanigans. All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. So if you'd like to get your question onto a future episode, go there, ask it. Maybe other people will vote it. You know, give you their thumbs. And if so, then here we go.
Did I use a thumb icon on there or was it an arrow? I can't remember.
I think it's a thumb where the end of the thumb is kind of mutated to be shaped like an arrow.
Nice.
If I recall correctly.
Is that right?
No.
I was like, weird.
Would be kind
it's
of
awesome. Fucking
it's
weird.
thumbs up vote.
Thumbs up vote. That sounds like an icon name.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's an icon for a flaming dumpster fire in that icon library.
Okay, I want to find a use for that.
Gotta figure it out.
It's got to be just exactly appropriate use.
I think you could use it as a delete button.
You could. I think it's more about
it's
for
more
moderation.
It's more like a delete
tool.
And report.
Exactly.
You know?
this is garbage,
and also we need to burn it all down.
Yeah, we have to sanitize the fact that this even happened.
Yeah. All right. First question comes from Angry Muffin. Will the Viru be making an appearance in Levelhead? Who are the Viru?
So the Viru are the floaty head guys, so that are the villains in
basically all the other
the
games.
Only villains that we
the only ones we have
in all of our adventure games.
Uh-huh. And we don't know yet. I think the story for Levelhead is something we actually still need to hammer out. Probably I'll spend some time on that today and figure out what the overall sort of narrative arc is, because all we needed to do is get that first one done, which we did, and then that was about as far as the site went. So now that worked and sort of proved itself, it's sort of asking the question, okay, what can we do? How do we want to do this? We've talked about a lot of different potential things that we could do in Levelhead to sort of enhance that feeling of adventure and story. But I think we don't know how to integrate all these.
Yeah,
things,
we don't know yet. And our focus right now on the campaign of Levelhead is more in the mechanical and teaching sense, as well as unlocking content. And we'll be kind of like figuring out the story later on in early access. Yeah. So. All right, next question comes from Dep Voodoo Pokul. Hey guys, would you ever consider doing a behind the scenes look at you guys making the podcast? at least maybe once. I hope I see it sometime, unless you have and I look really, really dumb. Ha 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 ha.
You don't look dumb because we haven't done it. But
plus,
I don't
even know what you look like.
That's true.
Probably not dumb.
You look good.
Probably
not dumb. You look good today.
You're looking good.
You know? Yeah. Good for you. No, I think that would be boring. So probably not.
I mean,
it's just us sitting in a room.
Yeah, but is that less boring than just listening?
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Because like, if that's boring, then also just listening should be boring. You know what I mean?
It's true.
I think if you can see people's eyeballs and their human faces while they're talking, I think that's always more engaging.
I think what it is that it's a ratcheting problem, right?
So ratcheting fidelity.
If you're going to show video, the video has to be entertaining.
Now we have to wear makeup.
Exactly.
And then we have to do that thing.
We have lights.
We have to do that thing that YouTubers do where they like cut every time mm-hmm. they would have paused for even a split second. They have to cut the video.
Yeah.
Because people can't wait for pauses.
Well, it's because the visuals are not that interesting to look at if someone's just talking.
There's also not a great angle you could take onto our current setup.
Also, we are surrounded by cardboard boxes.
There are t-shirts.
But also, there are microphones like literally just right in front of
our faces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where would you put that camera?
I mean, I'm literally looking. There's a microphone that's the entire height of my head, mm-hmm. right dead center on my face.
We could see each other.
Yeah, because we're on a triangle.
Yeah. No one could see us. Also, we would need a really wide angle camera because we're in a pretty small room.
Like a fisheye.
Yeah.
So that would look great.
It'd be a real gross video. It would now be. We're talking about it.
Well, if you think about, you know, a lot of the entertainment value of these videos, like we said, it comes from all these cuts. You know, it comes mm-hmm. from things always like moving around. And apparently on news channels and stuff, even though they're just like telling you the news, camera cuts happen every couple of seconds.
Yeah.
You know, they change angles, they change from one person to the other, and like that constant visual novelty is what mm-hmm. keeps you in there. If we just like dropped a camera in the corner and just it was just looking at us for an hour,
I feel
like that would be pretty great. It'd be mm-hmm. pretty amateur.
Because I feel like the audio is good, you know what I mean? Yeah. But if you put the visuals in there, now the visuals aren't good.
Oh, so
now
shit. The whole thing's bad. What if we made it mysterious? So like – put the camera there, but then like do some kind of a backlit thing and kind of mask our voices and make it seem like we're being interviewed on a crime show.
Or shit,
that would be
just did the crime.
Just put it in black and white.
Now it's classy.
Now it's classy and awesome.
Because they didn't know about cuts.
Or no, this is what we gotta do. Mm. GoPro headsets. So that all three of us are wearing a GoPro headset.
Looking
right at our faces so that we then have the three heads like sitting up.
Okay.
And then, shit, attached to the microphone of all things.
Well, yeah, you could do it. And then whenever that person's talking, then you turn it on.
Yeah.
So that way it just auto cuts between everything. Have a fully rendered, perfectly cut video.
And then during all those, most of the podcast while we're all talking at the same time,
mm-hmm.
then it just rapidly flashes back and forth.
Yeah, super excited.
I would put a GoPro on my tongue. And that way, only when I'm speaking can you also see. And I feel like that's kind of a cool effect. Yeah. You know,
like that.
But only while you're speaking and sticking your tongue as far out of your head as possible.
Yes.
It's a very small GoPro.
Which
that's how I talk, though.
Which sound in particular? As my tongue is moving, I'm trying to think of which sounds cause me to stick my tongue out, and I don't think I can find one. Okay.
Yeah, there's not.
I did used to know somebody.
The is one.
I knew somebody who, when they said the, their tongue would go out real weirdly far. I did know a person who did that.
He would like dart out?
Like, yeah. They would really like get their teeth like all the way in the middle of their tongue somehow.
I'd run a risk of biting your tongue off.
Yeah, that's a tough move.
Keep your tongue in the cage of
your
teeth.
It would be pretty hilarious.
Those teeth
to
are there
watch
for protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The teeth. So cage. We did do our first ever Coffee with Butterscotch was a video,
and it is pretty spectacular.
I think it's on our YouTube channel.
It's on
we
Facebook.
Started as like we were going to do like a monthly video update, mm-hmm. basically. Where and at the time we did this was during Quadrupus Rampage days.
Sam and Seth looked like literal babies.
Yeah, this was like
this was
seven years ago. It was 2013.
We're in my apartment
6 years ago,
and I think the opening. Yeah, I think the opening was I was in the
odd program,
and I was like, Seth, do you want some coffee? And you were like, yes,
yes. It was great. And then we looked up all the wildly varying reviews of Quadrupus Rampage.
And we read them.
We did dramatic readings of reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So some were like people talking about how the game was so good that they threw up. And then another person talking about like the game was so bad that they
wanted us to die.
They wanted us to die.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. We probably should do when Levelhead goes out. some dramatic readings of Steam reviews.
Oh yeah, I'm totally down. People are such dicks. It's
but when you read the review, you got to also include the hours played.
Yeah,
it'd be like 193 hours played. Thumbs down.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, that's like a rite of passage, is to make a game that people play so much
that they hate it.
That's like, that's
this is one of those, you know, if you live long enough, you become the bad guy situations.
I think so.
Yeah.
Was that just how video games
work? I think what it is,
that's how everything works.
It's that thing about relationships where you got to be really careful, where the things that you initially find endearing about a person are oftentimes the things that you end up hating about the person, like in the long term, you know? So same thing with games. Like
when you hate how endearing they are.
Yeah.
That's the worst
job. Have a spine, you know?
Yeah.
You can take fault with anything you want. So I think it's probably the same with games. You know, you play it for 1,000 hours. You're like, everything I loved, I now hate about you.
Yeah.
And that's it.
You know too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Next question comes from Beaky Bapa Boop. What's one small thing that you've done or gotten that's made your life much better?
I think I have already talked about my love for trays at some point.
Yep.
Long ago. They're great.
Wait, what was the phrase of the question?
It's what's one small thing that you've done or gotten
that's
made your life much better?
Done or gotten that's made my life much better.
Blackout curtains. Trays.
Blackout curtains.
Huge mug.
A literal requirement to be alive.
They're so good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's go down the list. All right. Blackout curtains. Trays.
Large jugs for carrying liquids.
Yeah. I've got a 2-liter water bottle. Mm-hmm. Only got to fill that thing up once a day.
Beautiful.
I got a ThinkPad keyboard that I use for my desktop that has the nubbin.
Oh yeah. Keyboard with a nubbin.
I got a Bluetooth tiny keyboard by Artek. Which is awesome as well, because it doesn't have anything attached. You just like slide it around as a tiny thing. And a Bluetooth mouse.
I got a YubiKey, which is a hardware 2-factor authentication device thing. That means that I don't always have to have my cell phone with me to log into things.
Yep.
Bungee chair helps your entire body
breathable.
Not be sweaty.
Yeah.
If you got a hot back.
Bungee chair. For me, a watch. Because the fewer reasons I have to take my phone out of my pocket, the happier I am.
Yeah.
If I can just know what time it is without having to look at a phone, and then all of a sudden I'm on YouTube.
Chapsticks for different places.
Oh, yeah.
One for the office.
Yeah, I took those away everywhere.
Oh, I thought you meant like different places on your body. I was like, ooh.
Well,
it is pretty dry out there. But.
Some of that Eucerin lotion for your face during the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Wonderful thing, you know? It's little things.
Face lotion.
Super good.
Good stuff.
I think we got a good list. What's some others?
I know there's some stuff that like around the house that I've really into, but I haven't a good vacuum.
Yeah.
Really.
Those Swiffer duster things, those are awesome.
They're pretty good.
The little hand ones.
Oh, if you do any kind of outdoor stuff, there's a thing, I think it's just called like a weeder.
Sure.
It's basically like a long spike with two little prongs on the end of it.
Oh, yeah. You just twist it in there.
Yeah. If you've ever pulled weeds, like you just take the thing, you just like jam it in the ground, and bloop, the weed just like falls out of the ground. Oh, my God. It's so great.
For stabbing weeds.
Yeah. And what else? Everyday stuff.
I guess on that note, too, a garden knife, which is basically like a really skinny shovel that's sharpened on one side and serrated on the other.
Whoa.
Yeah, like that fucking
thing. So you can just do anything with it.
Yeah, you can. So you can literally just like, you can cut a square of sod up and then like just yank it out, and then you can put a stone there. You know, that's nice. So you can just, it's like tracing. Ooh. You know, so you can do that, or you can just get out really hard to get weeds.
A garden knife.
It's pretty fun.
Also, we all have robot arms.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what they're called, but it's basically a thing that you can mount to your desk, and then you put your monitor on it, and then you can position it wherever you want. So if you find that, hey, my neck hurts from being at the computer and leaning forward like a weird vulture and trying to squint and get closer to my screen, you can just now take your screen and move it closer to your face and then sit with actually good posture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's been a life changer.
LASIK. Yeah. I like that a lot.
It's not really a small thing. Probably.
It's not a small thing. Well, it's a small thing.
It's
a big purchase.
It operates on it's a big purchase. Yeah.
It's an investment.
But it happens very.
Because think about how expensive glasses are and all these other shit.
Honestly, I think those things are still cheaper over the long run.
I don't know. I mean, LASIK gets a good like a 10-year
stretch. Actually, maybe not, because contacts are pretty fucking expensive.
They're very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
What does a person spend a year on contacts?
I wouldn't know.
Mine were, I don't know. I think it was like $110 for like six months or something.
Something like
Also,
it's a couple hundred bucks a year.
Good fitting jeans.
Yeah.
Some with the elastic in them, so they're kind of like jeggings.
Dude, fucking stretchy jeans.
Stretchy jeans.
Yeah, I mean, I was always kind of on the camp of like, who cares? Bleh, I'm an American and I don't care how I look.
I'm going to wear my baggy 90s pants.
I wear my baggy 90s pants. And then when I was like, you know what?
I need to quit looking like a sack of garbage.
I need to look like I meant to be here.
Yeah.
You know? And so
the issue is like, is properly fitting clothes in general.
Oh, it's a life changer.
Yeah.
Such a confidence booster.
Yeah. Ninja blender. Love that thing. We got one because I used to hate the one. I hate blenders because they make too much damn noise. But this one was a little bit quieter. But then also,
I assume it sounds like a jet engine.
It still sounds like a jet engine, but a
quiet jet engine.
It the top of it locks in place, so you can never turn it on when the lid isn't fully on. Which maybe is not a problem for you guys, but I've done enough stupid things. That was a problem for me. And then it just blades. It's got three blades. So because of that, then the rotor thing is actually a cylinder.
Is not fun.
It's easy.
We have one of those, but because of the three
– triple knives?
Yeah, because the triple knives are stacked just far enough apart that it's easy to get in there, but not easy to get in there without touching the other ones.
Yeah, you got
it requires
some – callus here.
It requires some agility. It's called the ninja because you need to be a ninja to clean between the blades.
Oh, I love that thing though. I used to hate making smoothies and stuff because it would take forever. Now, like, that thing's just like,
it doesn't care.
It doesn't care at all. Anything. Put anything in there, it'll destroy it.
But I do want to come back to stretchy jeans.
Okay,
though,
yeah.
Because that was, I think all of them are doing it now, but there was this period of time where I went, because I go buy a new pair of jeans or a new set of jeans every like 2 years, roughly. Mm-hmm. Like when the pair that I have start having crotch holes, then that's now time to upgrade.
Yeah, tell you now.
And so
a few years ago,
stretching out.
Yeah.
Well, this is exactly the problem, right? A few years ago, suddenly at American Eagle, which is where I think the only place that has jeans that fit me. So that's just where I always get my jeans. They had these, they called them Extreme Flex. And I was like, I was just trying on some stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And so I put them on and I was like, oh my God.
Did you feel extreme?
I felt extreme and flexible.
For the first time.
Yeah. Because
I could do anything in these pants.
Like, I mean, jeans are kind of not stiff exactly like good jeans.
They're pretty constraining.
But they're kind of constraining. And especially if you want to use them to like work outside or even just like to go to work or to do things. All of a sudden, you kind of feel like you can't just run all of a sudden or you can't bend over really easily because you might rip a crotch hole in your jeans, which I've just slowly done for all of my jeans that I've ever owned.
But that stretch.
That stretch. Oh, my God. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I was always in the camp of like, I want, whenever I go get clothes or whatever, I'm just in and out, boom, boom. I just want to like get in there, buy whatever size technically sort of matches my measurements. Mm-hmm. And then whatever the outcome is, that's what I'm just going to be dealing with for the next 3 years. And then finally I was like, nope, fuck this. And I actually like, I took a day and I went to like five different places and tried on a whole bunch of jeans.
You found ones that actually fit?
Found ones that really fit. And then, and all of a sudden now just everything's better.
Yeah.
Also, it is true. Long decorative socks. Super all about it.
That's a life changer.
Look at this. Look at this sock.
What's the outcome?
It's just fucking fun in the morning. You look at, I got like 10 pairs of just weirdly colorful socks.
Yeah, mine isn't the decorative part, but it's the actually buying high quality socks.
Yeah, that's also good.
So, which is like, all my socks are wool now, or like these weird wool hybrid things.
So they breathe.
So they, which I always thought, like, why the fuck would you want wool socks? Because like, you'd think they'd be itchy and you'd get super sweaty. But now, like, I put on cotton socks a little while ago because I still had some old ones, you know? And it was just like, I felt so terrible. I was like, oh my God, this is what my whole life used to be like, was wearing these
socks. It's like cotton versus MeUndies.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, the last thing is a white noise machine for the sleeps.
Yeah, for me, I just use a fan for that purpose, but I probably should get a white noise machine.
I've got one.
It's sleep related. It's good.
Yeah, it emits, I have like the blackout curtains and then the white noise machine.
Earplugs. I got earplugs. My dog licks his lips, makes me want to kill him. So I had to put earplugs in.
Actually, and good dogs are going to be destroyed. Yeah. I got some really, really good ones.
I just buy the pack from Walgreens. Works super
well. These ones are cheap, but they like, I don't know, there's something about them just... I think it's that they're easier to get because you have to like worm them all the way fucking into your head.
Skull.
You know? Yeah. And they're easier to worm in there and they inflate faster and more and just a little bit better than the ones I've had.
Are they the green ones?
No, they're actually
like a huge jar of green ones.
No, these ones they're actually bicolored, like super yellow and super kind of pinkish purple, which is also good butterscotch theming. So
nice. Yeah. About it. What about a cell phone battery?
I used to have one, but I don't
care.
If I've got I've got one for when I'm traveling.
Yeah, especially for something like GDC.
Yeah. If you just get like if you get a 10,000 milliamp hour battery, it's like it's pretty good size. But then that way you're just like I could do literally anything.
Yeah, we got some luggage. We got some luggage and it came with the battery. So actually, I do. Yeah. We did actually take them with us whenever we travel now.
But yeah, that that weird anxiety of like, what if my phone dies? I don't like, so I don't want to use it. It's like having those rejuvenation potions in Diablo. You know, you're like,
save them for the boss.
Save them for the boss fight. And then you get to your hotel at the end of the day and you still have 93% battery because you never
use it.
You didn't play games on the plane. You didn't do anything. You didn't even look at it. You know?
Yeah. My battery life on my phone is also garbage by now because it's like a 3 or 4 year old.
You got
phone.
An S6.
Six.
Yeah. I'm 10 now, right? You're almost 4 generations old now.
And so its battery life is really not great.
So it's sort of a great grand phone.
Yes. But all I have my little battery phone case thing that just makes my phone like twice as thick as it normally is. But with that thing, it'll last basically a whole day, actually. Like a legit wake up, use it heavily, go to bed kind of a full day, despite the fact that the internal battery doesn't do jack shit. And so that means I get to still keep this phone for the foreseeable future.
It's really just the batteries that's the problem most of the time. Our next question comes from Captain Jazz. Who appropriately asks, Adam, according to your LinkedIn page, you list one of the societies you were a part of back in university was Chicago Men's Acapella. Mm-hmm. Care to give us a sample of what went down up there?
A sample of what went down.
They want to.
Captain Jazz wants you to.
You want to beat, like, get
sing
you going?
A few bars for us.
I haven't. Basically, since college, because in college I did a lot of singing, like in high school and choir and all that stuff, and then did various choral things as well as a cappella groups in college, and then like singing lessons and the whole works, and then basically stopped singing after that because when you have a place where you can go where everybody's singing, you know,
it makes it less weird.
But the problem is
that's how I feel about swimming.
Yes, and swimming is hard to do anyway because you got to go find a place with a pool.
But it's easier to sing. I mean, equipment wise.
Yeah. But the problem is actually it's weirdly not though, because if you are living in a city, then you have most of my life until we got our house finally, a few years ago, was spent with shared walls with randoms, right?
Yeah. You don't want to just be belting out.
Yeah, so you can't practice music at home, but you just can't. And even now, since I'm still I've got a house, but it's in the city and my one of my neighbor's house is literally like 3 feet away from, mine. And like it's sound dampened enough that like I could, and honestly, nobody would care, but it's the fact that people
can hear you.
Like I know people could just like walking down the street, walking their dogs. Like they would just be able to hear me in practicing the shitty parts. Cause that's how you get good.
Yep.
So as a consequence, I basically just literally, it was a core part of my life for most of the sort of transformative years. And then I just stopped.
Yeah. That was the same for me with swimming. Swimming was a huge deal, and then in college there was no swim team. This was part of that, like at the university they needed to balance out the men's and women's sports, and men had football, which had like a million people in it, and so then they had to cut basically every other men's sport. So they cut like baseball, they cut golf, cut swimming, they cut everything, and then they had to shore up, and they were adding like women's rugby, like all kinds of other things. So basically, as a guy, if I wanted to do any kind of college athletics at the school I was going to, I had football.
That's it.
Like football, basketball. I think that was
Which has been funny because now every time they've called you to ask for money, you've just given them shit.
Yep. what I also knew was that the football team was losing $5 million a year from that school.
Crazy.
So, I was like, no. Mm-mm. Before you ask me for a donation, maybe get your own shit in order. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In terms of your finances. but yeah, so like I would have liked to do swimming, but there's no option. So I started up a swim club there and kind of ran that for a while and had maybe 20 people coming to swim. And it was pretty fun. And like we tried to host meets and stuff, but there were no other there was nobody to swim against.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and there were master swim programs around, but they were. It's weird. It was just weird. Yeah, competitive scene just kind of disappears in swimming.
Yeah. Well, and it was fun because that acapella group I co-founded with a few other people who were taking voice lessons from the same teacher, which I think was my sophomore year of college. And that group still exists.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's got like 30 people in it. Like when we started it, we had 8 of us, I think. And now it's got 30 people. And literally nobody in there knows who the founding members were, because we didn't. It's not like a frat, so it doesn't have the same kind of like. history, really. But it has enough of that because you know, there's like an alumni newsletter where they, you know, every year they ask for some money, but then also say like, here's our final concert of the year. We want all the alumni to come, you know, and they do have, there's a school fight song from like the 20s or whatever called Strong for Chicago. Cause that's the school that I went to.
Yeah.
And apparently at the end of all their concerts where they do invite the alumni, they have that song very last and they invite the alumni to come up and sing it with them, you know? And of course I probably do not remember the lyrics to it at this point. Basically, I haven't gone back to one of those yet, but it's one of the things that I definitely am going to do at some point.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny because every once in a while I get an email from somebody over there, like they're trying to figure out who's responsible. Cause I actually used to own their website until literally this year when, and
someone called, they're like, can we have that?
And they didn't know who owned it. Right. Cause I basically, all I did was I just pointed it to some place that one of like somebody from, I think 4 years ago or something, or 5 years ago, had put a website together and they were like, hey, can you point the domain to the new place of the thing? And so I was like, cool, I'll just do that. So basically every year I just pay for it and then just
sits there. Was your donation too.
Yeah, that was my donation every year. And but literally like nobody knew over there because like they didn't know that I existed. They didn't, you know, so it's kind of this funny old legacy thing that just every once in a while rears its head again in this sort of entertaining way. Yeah. But now that I've given up ownership of the site back to the actual group, now you're just cut off. I'm completely cut off.
Hey man, you were a singer.
I did a lot of singing.
You sung. Yeah. You sang.
Did you ever get over the sort of self-conscious aspect of it?
I did enough because actually I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I was never so good that I was doing solos, but I was good enough that I was always like, I would have if there wasn't this one guy who was always there, you know, sort of situation.
Good, so, good second string.
Yeah, exactly. I was kind of like always like a, you know, good second string sort of position, which is kind of fun because you get to kind of like be behind the scenes a bit, but then still get to feel like you're really contributing to the group effort, you know? So,
yeah.
So I really enjoyed it.
No samples today.
No samples. It's just been too long. You know? I can't pull that out of
the problem is, you know, the samples, they've been fermenting. They've been sitting there in barrels for
and not in the good way
for a decade now, and they're not aging like a fine wine.
No, it's more bacterial than yeasty.
Yeah. next question comes from Creator Red A. Have you ever gotten a business card from someone that you actually used? On a related note, what are your opinions on self-promotion?
Yes, in that when we go to GDC, I collect business cards and I come home. I email everybody who I collected a business card from and say, hey, it was nice to meet you, et cetera. Then I throw the business cards away.
Yep.
And then roughly one out of four to 10 of those people that I email me back. And now those people end up in my like list of people that I know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so that's the use of a business card.
We did compile all of our business contacts at one point into a big system when we were going to be doing our own PR stuff. But that proved it's a super useful thing to do, but we just decided not to do it.
Well, I think the list ended up not having a lot of value.
Because people turn over and
because the turnover is too high.
Yeah.
So, yeah, actually somebody was asking in the Discord if we would consider going to Xbox and all this kind of stuff. And I came in there and I was like, yeah, the problem is that we don't know anybody over there. You know, like we used to. We used to know people at Xbox, and now every single of those people we knew, there were four people involved with us talking with them about Crashlands. Now, what was that? I guess two years ago. Yeah. Like, so not that long ago. And literally every single one of them is now in different departments of Microsoft that have nothing to do with Xbox.
Yeah, there's that Monty Python sketch where they talk about building a castle in the swamp, and they're like, we built the first castle, and it sank into the swamp, but the second castle, and that one sank in, then the third one fell over, burned down, then sank into the swamp, but the fourth one stayed up, you know, it's like, that's what it feels like.
It's exactly what it feels
like. So it feels like building relationships with these giant companies, because every year it just sinks into the swamp.
And sometimes they don't pass you along, which is the weirdest one.
Never.
Which actually never happened. Yeah,
I get because
they have so many devs to correspond with that if we weren't actively talking to them within like the 3 week period before they decided to like, you know, horizontally move or whatever the hell's happening.
And during the 3 week period that person was working in that department.
Yeah.
You know, right. Well, it seems to be that on average, so we do have two of our people that we know from different companies have been there the whole time.
Yes.
Although one of them starting to kind of move a little bit, which is getting a little disconcerting. But then the other ones have literally been like a 6 month turnover where we'll finally get a hold of somebody. We'll chat, have great conversations, and things are looking just absolutely wonderful. And then we email them again maybe 2 months later and they're like, Oh yeah, I don't work there anymore. Or they just, there is no response because they've left and their email address isn't even the same.
Or yeah, the worst is, oh yeah, I'm not in that department anymore. And we're like, can you point us to who is? And like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know who that is. Yeah.
Great. Cool. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. And that's the weird thing about working on these longer timescales too, because the games take, you know, it's taken a year to get leveled to this point now. It'd basically be like a year, you know, almost and a half before the game comes out.
Yeah.
Total dev time. And then from that point to launch, we're, you know, we're planning on being in early access as long as we need to, but it's probably going to be between 4 and 12 months. Who knows as far as that. And so you have to build these relationships and then sustain them through the duration of the project so that you can actually, you know, do whatever you're trying to do from a business standpoint. And so cycling through 2 to 4 people over the course of one game's lifetime of development is just a little rough in terms of doing this business stuff. It never gets easier. It's the thing. Adam and I were talking about this last week. It doesn't seem to actually get easier for us yet. So
no.
Nope.
No, it does not.
Yeah. And I don't know when it will.
I don't know if it will.
I mean, part of our,
it might not ever. I think part of the problem is that if you're coming from these really big companies where the ones who are actually putting your work out near the storefronts, they don't give a fuck because they don't need to, you know, because like,
well, I feel like individual people might, right?
Yeah.
But the company
as a whole is not.
Yeah. I don't think developer relations are at the forefront of any one of the companies.
No, they're absolutely not.
If that makes sense. Yeah. And so because it's not like
but
a pillar.
Then what is?
It's surprising, you know? Because we make them money. We make all the money.
Like, yeah, well, that's the problem of the abundance of supply.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Is that developer relations, like with a capital D and a capital R, mm-hmm. as like a thing, as an overarching thing, is going to be important in the sense that they don't want to piss off developers, like, right. as a holistic group.
Yeah.
They don't have to care too much if they have a good enough monopoly.
They don't have to care that much. And also, they don't have to care that much about individual developers, mm-hmm. you know. They don't care if any one game succeeds or fails. What they care about is the global revenue on their platform. So that kind of brings in sort of a weird asymmetrical incentives situation in some cases. So I don't know. All right, next question comes from Mopate Flatunk.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
These random names are great. hey, brethren of the butter-flavored scotches, does Seth still stream on the weekends? I was following it for a while and just kind of fell off. I went looking for it today and am dismayed that I cannot find a trace of Seth streaming or of the game that he was working on. Is there an archive of the videos somewhere?
Is there?
No. So so basically what happens is –
does Twitch drop them after like 30 days or something?
Yeah. You need to be a partner on Twitch to keep those archives. And to become a partner, you have to stream on 7 unique days in a 1-month period. And you need to like reach a certain follower threshold. They have all these markers.
Sure.
And I hit all of them except for the stream on 7 unique days because I just wanted to stream on Saturday mornings.
Right.
And by doing that, no matter how many people would have watched or anything, if I didn't do it for 3 other days in a 1-month period, then I would never. So I never did it.
So you have to do it two times a week, basically.
You have to do it twice a week for a month, basically. Right. Yeah. So
yeah, they're gone.
They're just gone. they're never coming back. I actually did, I think, migrate a couple of them to YouTube, but then and they're still private. But it's weird because a lot of the stream is
interaction.
Like, is interaction between like somebody ask a question, then I would talk with the people in chat.
Mm-hmm.
But then if chat wasn't on screen or anything, and so
right,
so it's just like it's like me just talking to myself like a weirdo for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely fun to do, but it was also very exhausting.
Yeah, it's tiring.
Like, because programming's hard. Doing it in front of an audience is even harder. And then also I was doing it on Saturday. Like, my entire Saturday morning every Saturday for a couple months was also gone.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to make sure that like always fits in the schedule was a bit much. So I don't know if I'll do it again. It was fun, but I don't know if we'll do it again in any kind of consistent way. As far as the game, it's still there. Like, it's still in our bit bucket.
Space bump.
Mm-hmm. It's. I would say it's coming along, but it hasn't moved at all because I was only developing it while streaming.
It came along for a while.
It came along. All right, we got time for one last question, which is from Serator. I've heard about this memory palace technique you explained, but never tried it yet. Do you think that it could also work twice? You said you memorized your principles when walking from the parking lot to the office. Would you have to choose a different route when memorizing another list of things to prevent mixing up the two lists, or does it work for lists that change on a daily basis, like grocery lists?
So
basically, like, when does this thing work?
It actually works very well for what doesn't actually exist, but what you would call medium-term memory, right? Which is stuff you need to hold on to for a while, but that's totally fine to forget after a while, like a grocery list. So I use it all the time, actually, when getting groceries. If the list is short enough, like less than 10 items, then I do one through my car. That way I don't have to look at my phone because I hate looking at my phone. So I just take like a minute before I go into the grocery store and then go in. So it does actually, you can reuse stuff all the time with it.
One of my advanced memory techniques for groceries is make a list on paper.
It's one way to do it.
I call it a memory paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I use Google Keep on my phone because it's a shared thing, so that then my wife and I can both put things on the list and both take things back off the list if Google one of us are shopping.
Google Keep.
It's just a to-do list, but it's just like, it's just already on the phone. So,
oh
yeah, I just hate looking at my phone. Also, don't want to cop. We have my wife and I keep our lists in like a workflowy grocery list thing, but I don't want to look at it. So usually she'll just send me a picture of it and then I'll just think about it and then go into the grocery store. I think the thing that's funny about though is that this whole like, well, I haven't tried it yet. It's like literally try to memorize like five things with your car or with your apartment or something like that. It takes shockingly little time and effort. It seems like a big thing, but I guarantee you it takes way less energy than
that's
you think.
True. Yeah. When we were doing the memory palace for the studio principals, Sam just was like, all right, listen to this. And then he just sort of walked through it. And then he was like, okay, tell me the principles. And then I was like, boop, 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 boop. Just one after the other.
Yeah.
In the correct order and everything.
So generating them, of course, is takes slightly more effort when you're actually coming up with whatever the weird mental image is. But it's honestly not that hard. And it makes a lot of things way easier and just honestly more fun. It's like, I don't want to go to the grocery store and just be looking at a phone constantly and, you know, all that. So I just put it in there and then go.
Also,
and then I forget it by the time.
Speaking of interesting sort of like ways to come up with analogies of how space and time relate to things, we came up with this cool calendar in our studio, which is we got a deck of cards.
Mm, yeah.
Because it turns out that there's the same
jet black deck of cards.
Yeah, there's the same number of weeks in a year as there are cards in a in a standard deck. Every now and then there's like an extra week because of the way the days land, but that's a joker, so that's fine. It's like you got the joker weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually given us an interesting perspective on the year because we now have this deck of cards up on the wall. And so we know – and like each suit is a quarter, right? So so we're now like we're nearing the end of spades. We're now on the 10 of spades.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very interesting
–
yeah, like coming up with these ways to kind of revisualize, you know, space and time kind of helps you think about things.
It helps you keep things in perspective, I think, is the big part. So like at the end of every week, we write like whatever the major things that happened that week were on it.
On the card.
Yeah, and we did this with sticky notes last year, and it proved to be it's just a good way to, at a glance.
Get a synopsis of the year.
Yeah, like how far are we into this year? And then with the sticky notes, we would change the colors of ones where it was like, oh, we're going to GDC, or this is, you know, the team summer break or Thanksgiving break, whatever.
So you can see like, oh, we're 3 weeks away from that thing. Just look at the wall. You can see it right there.
Yeah. So I really enjoy that sort of thing. I think it's all about making time more visible so you can make better decisions about it.
It's like the DevOps. You've got to make your work visible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
By sometimes turning it into a weird imagination land.
Yep.
Or slapping it up on the wall.
Turns out it's real good.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have merch, links to the Discord, and all kinds of other great stuff over there. We also have tickets for Shenanicon are now available at meet.bscotch.net.
Mm-hmm.
Either spelling is fine, the food or the verb. So head on over to meet.bscotch.net, and you can get your tickets to come to St. Louis and then to meet us in September.
I think it's September.
Yeah. September. Whatever
we've already sold two tickets. These things are flying off the shelves.
They're flying. So, you know, get in there. Get in there and get those tickets. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.